On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
Let's take a quick look at the front pages of the newspapers, and there is really only one story that is dominating, as it has been for the last couple of weeks. We'll start with the Sunday Independent. Maeve Sheehan writing on the front: hospitals now expect 3,000 admissions by the end of the month. Health service in crisis as 2,000 medics hit by coronavirus. Front page of the Sunday Times, similar. Mark Tighe and Stephen O'Brien writing that rocketing COVID cases predicted to top 6,000 a day. And this is a quote from Philip Nolan yesterday, that potentially 6,000 a day this month on top of the 3,000 hospitalizations, as remarked in the Sunday Independent. Moving to the Business Post, HSE tightens track and trace amid massive surge in virus cases. Tracers told to speed up calls to help work through the growing backlog. Usually it takes about 50 minutes to do a contact tracing call. They're being told to do it in 20 minutes now. The Irish Mail on Sunday, front page: hospitals on the brink as COVID runs riot. New cases heading for 6,000 a day. Health system can't cope, warns expert. Lockdown until at least the end of February. And finally, the Irish Sunday Mirror: double trouble. COVID cases surged to 3,394 overnight. That, of course, yesterday's figure, some of that being a backlog which still hasn't caught up, and you could expect to see really repeated over the coming days. Docs warn the worst is yet to come. Well, to talk about this and some of the other issues going on that are obviously going to affect the government, not least Brexit, we're joined by the Minister for Transport, the Environment, Climate and Communications and the Green Party leader, Eamon Ryan. Minister Ryan, good morning, Happy New Year, and thanks for talking to us this afternoon.
Good morning, Sean. Happy New Year to you as well.
Look, we'll start with COVID. I did hear your remark over the holidays a number of days ago that if this level 5 doesn't work in January, that further measures will be needed. What measures?
We'll have to wait and see, first of all, whether these measures do work. And this is a very worrying time. Those headlines are accurate and correct in terms it is, I think we said a week ago, very sobering, the rise in numbers. A week later, we've seen a significant decrease in the number of people in hospital. We expect for the next week at least that those numbers, as you say, the backlog from that Christmas period to continue to be very high. What we have to wait and see is the level 5 restrictions that have been put in place, start to see them level off and then decline. It's interesting in the note from Philip Nolan, I think he affirmed that actually they believe the level 5 restrictions that are in place now may be sufficient. We won't know because there are various uncertainties in this. The new variation it seems from all the evidence, is more transmissible. Whether that affects our numbers or not, we'll have to wait for the next week. But I think the immediate first priority for all of us is fairly simple, clear advice: avoid contact with other people, stay at home. The success or otherwise of this is on the basis of millions of small interactions where we do reduce our contacts. And in that way, we've shown in the past we can flatten the curve. I know it's 9 months ago now when that we first heard that expression, but that's what we have to do. And I believe, particularly if we put in a really strong effort in the next week, all of us, which I think the Irish people are well up to, we will see that happening, and we will avoid our hospitals becoming overrun. That's our first key priority.
But I suppose the fear, particularly after you said that, and not only yourself, I think Minister Simon Coveney has also said it, that further measures might be needed. I mean, level 5 didn't fully work in November. I know you said it worked to a point. It got it down to around 250, and we were coming from a lower base. So if we get to the end of January or the middle of February, whenever it happens to be, and this hasn't worked to a great extent, is there anywhere you can go after level 5?
They're always, because it is in our hands, as I said, to the level of contacts we have. So whether that's, for example, reducing the travel restrictions from 5K down to 2K, which we did last March and April, and a range of other different measures that you could look at then. But that's for a week or two's time if we find that the numbers aren't starting to flatten off and then decrease. I believe they can. Nothing certain, as I said, because there are new variations of the virus. But my sense from watching the figures in terms of traffic volumes, from looking at my, you know, anecdotally from friends and other people, contacts around the country, I think Irish people are very aware of the risks here and what's at stake. And I think we collectively are, can be good or have been good in the last 9 months. I think we will be again this week at really locking down, hunkering down tight, avoiding contacts, keeping simple measures like that is actually the way to manage this. And I believe if we all do that, then we will see those numbers start to fall again and we'll avoid the worst consequences for our hospitals.
What about the continued closure of the schools? Because obviously it's tomorrow week. It's not this kind of 2 week period that you would like to have to consider more data. A lot of parents very concerned, trying to make their plans. And given that you did decide to close for those 3 extra days when the numbers were relatively low compared to where they are going, I mean, is the reality here that schools are not going to open on the 11th at all?
Well, we saw those rise in numbers about a week ago. Now, they didn't figure or work through in terms of the public data until last night, that figure of 3,300 and so. But I think we were aware when we made that decision last week in terms of moving to the more strict level 5 measures that the numbers were rising exponentially. All the evidence and all decisions we made here on the basis of science and basis of trying to assess risk and the balance of public health benefits and downsides in terms of contacts. But there is a real public health benefit in terms of us having schools open. There's a real benefit for the students, particularly who all the evidence shows that, you know, a prolonged period outside school does hinder their health. And what we saw over the last 6 months is that our schools, since we opened them in, well, September, short period, 4 or 5 months, but we saw that they were actually able to operate in a safe way. The level of transmission was very low, lower than in the wider community. The wearing of masks in school, the provision of kind of PPE or basic sanitizing and other measures did actually work. And so I'm confident our schools will be able to reopen and our early childcare facilities on the 11th. Really, it's the sort of work that was done by the teachers, by the students. They know what to do. They've shown they can do it. And I believe we, as a country and as a community, we'll be able to manage through this.
But to be fair, Minister, that was before there was this break where COVID suddenly became rampant in the community very, very quickly. So the fear isn't necessarily that when everyone was in schools before Christmas that it wasn't spreading there, but that a lot of people are now coming back into school from communities where there has been quite a rampant spread and where potentially some of these new strains, there is a limited evidence that they do spread quicker among children. So is reopening them really not just going to kickstart these figures again and move it a lot higher because we're not dealing with the same situation we were before Christmas?
No, but we will have what we're seeing is a particular surge at the moment. It has happened in just about every other European country. We've seen elsewhere and in our own country that by our actions, particularly in the next week, start to see that flatten and come down. And in those circumstances, I think it will be safe to go back to school. So but it is something we'll have to review and look at. But the evidence, and I think our public health advice on this is, yes, we should be able to do it. That is the key task. So what we're doing here is two goals. One is to protect our health system and life, obviously. But secondly, it is to protect our young people's future, allow them to go back to school. And if we act collectively, if we all stay at home for the next week, which we can do, then I believe it will be safe for the schools to reopen.
So as of now, they are going to reopen on the 11th. When is a final decision going to be taken? Because we know there's a meeting on Wednesday, NPHET on Thursday. That's very late for parents who are looking for a bit of certainty for Monday week.
Yeah, but that the schools are reopening on the 11th. As I said, if there's any need for change in that, obviously the government and the health officials will look at it. But I think we're all agreed that is the correct approach to take. And we will be looking at every day this week at this. Virus has changed very, very quickly. We've responded quickly in terms of going to those higher level restrictions. I believe it's the actions of the Irish people will actually see that start to work, and we'll be monitoring that every day. Well, not just the next week, but for the coming 2 months. This is a critical period. We need to get that time where we get the vaccines out, protect the most vulnerable, And in so this next week or two are going to be critical, and I believe we can flatten that curve in the way we have done previously.
Minister, what do you believe is the cause for that sudden exponential rise? Because the evidence from Killian de Gascoigne of NPHET is that only 10% of the cases, albeit on a small number tested, are actually because of this new UK variant, which would suggest that the rise is actually because of the restrictions or lack of restrictions in December and the policy decisions taken by the government.
We won't know that for a period yet, because, as you say, the assessment is very limited in terms of so far of the extent of that new variant and the effect it's having. But we are, I mean, the European Centre for Disease Control has issued very clear guidance that it is a factor and governments should take it into account. The UK government health analysis was something that we had to respond to. And will. It undoubtedly also a significant part was the increased contacts that existed through the Christmas period. My sense is even before Christmas Day, people were starting to realize that actually the numbers were rising, and actually we started to adjust behavior. A lot of the figures we're seeing now or in the last few days, that sudden rise, are accounted for by kind of contacts that took place in the week before Christmas. My sense is that Irish people start to have a sense closer to Christmas Day that actually things were getting more risky. My sense over the New Year's period or the intervening period between Christmas and New Year's, there wasn't anything like the level of social contacts. And so if, as I said, we double down on that in the next week by staying at home, avoiding meeting other people, simple as that, we will see it coming back down. Whatever the source of the original, whether it was, how much was accounted for that new variant, how much is accounted for just social contact, particularly in winter periods and particularly in indoor settings. That's, I suppose, another key factor. We all know that really the key to this is good ventilation, is not being indoors with other outside contacts. So what combination of those different factors caused the recent spike, we'll have to wait for science to do the full analysis. It's not available yet. But I think we're right to be cautious and to assume that, we know that that variant is here. We know that the science seems to be indicating that it is significantly more transmissible, and that therefore it makes sense for us to really be aware of it and to take it into account in whatever we're doing.
How long? We have a number of texts in about this. One from Ian in Dublin saying that the travel ban to the UK, some people do have legitimate reasons to travel at the moment. No clarity from government on how long it will last. How long do you expect it to last?
We extended it to the 6th. There's meetings today between our own department officials, the Attorney General's office and others. We're working with the UK government on this, looking to introduce further health precaution measures, further testing of anyone who, when flights or ferry bookings do return, that we will require someone to have a PCR test before departure and also still isolate when they get here. So to really double down on health prevention or health protection. I know it's going to be difficult for some people. There's always kind of cases where people do need to travel, but going back to what I was saying earlier on, in the next couple of weeks, at this particular time, with the numbers in the UK being rising dramatically as well, this is a period when it's only really essential workers, in my mind. It's only those truckers or other haulage operators who are bringing in vital supplies are the people who need to travel in these coming weeks. We have facilitated ourselves, our Department of Transport and the Department of Foreign Affairs facilitated those who had to get home. So we haven't left people stranded. We put in a good operation with the ferry companies and the airlines to make sure that those who did have to get back home were able to do so. But really, in the next couple of weeks, I think there's going to be very little travel between ourselves and the UK, other than really essential purposes.
One of the big worries in the papers today, Minister, is obviously in relation to the hospital service, whether it is going to be overwhelmed. We're told around 2,000 healthcare workers who are out with COVID, potentially as many as 3,000 admissions by the end of the month. On a kind of related tangent to that, has a deal been done yet with the private hospitals to be able to take over some of their capacity? Obviously, it was there and not needed in the first wave, but we haven't really heard anything about it now that we possibly do need it.
If we do need it, we will be able to do similar deals. But first thing, I was listening to the news headlines there, and I think one of the managers at the hospital saying that non-essential, non-elective surgery won't proceed. Government has given, we gave a clear direction last week to the Department of Health and to the NPHET and the Public Health and HSE to say that we felt all non-essential medical, elective or other outpatient services within hospitals should be put off for the moment. There's always a lull at Christmas. About 1,500 beds became free every Christmas time, and it happened again this year because people don't tend to go to hospital for Christmas. What we've said to the hospitals and the health system is keep them free. Don't fill them up again with what might be procedures or other care that could be put back for a later day, because we could see a week ago that we were facing into a real difficulty in terms of with these surging numbers. So there is going to be that sort of additional capacity within the public health system initially. I suppose secondly, at the same time, or critically, next week in 17 of our hospitals, 17 hospital groups, 17,000 frontline healthcare workers are going to get vaccinated. They're first up along with the long-term residents in nursing care centres. But the hospital workers' cover, vaccinated cover, is critical, because if they're going to be under pressure, we need them to be protected to be able to manage our system. So it's a combination of what we do at home by staying at home, by vaccinating our health workers, by freeing up beds, by not doing non-essential work. And if all that doesn't avail or doesn't give us the cover, then yes, of course, we will be bringing in the private system, the private hospitals, in the same way that happened last March. But those first two lines of defence are the critical ones to put in play, first of all.
Okay. On that vaccination programme, there is obviously consideration being given by NPHET to follow what the UK is doing and to delay the giving of the second jab, if you like, so you can get the first inoculation out to more people without giving them that follow-up. Pfizer have said there is no evidence that if you wait longer than 3 weeks that you are protected from coronavirus, that you need to have these in those particular timelines. So what side of this are we going to come down on here?
Tony Holland, the Chief Medical Officer, has written to the National Immunisation Advisory Committee asking for their opinion on it, because what the UK have done, you could see they're doing it because of this spike in numbers to try and give an immediate protection. At the same time, you listen to Dr. Fauci, the US expert, saying that he isn't advising that be done, because the clinical trials were done on the basis of a 22-day period. So whatever the advice in that, we should follow the best scientific and medical advice, and there are different views on it. I suppose one of the first other elements of that, you mentioned the Pfizer vaccine. I mean, the other kind of advice we get from the health authorities is that we're not going to be stockpiling any vaccines. In other words, as soon as we get them, we'll be deploying them. So the rollout of this will be dependent on how quickly the European medicines agencies approve the likes of the Moderna and the AstraZeneca virus. The European Union have just done a deal, I think, with Pfizer this week for an additional 100 million doses. That'll be an extra 1.1 million for Ireland. It's about 3.4 million in total. So as soon as we get them in, we'll be deploying them. 40,000 units a week, starting from tomorrow, as I said, with the focus on the hospitals and the long-term nursing care centres. And really, it's the reason why we have to stay at home and kind of reduce our contacts is to give our health system time, and it'll be involving the entire system, GPs, pharmacists, mass vaccination centres will be involved. And as soon as we get the vaccines, as part of the international agreement that the European Commission has done with the various companies, we'll be deploying them straight away. So there'll be no holding back, no delay. It will be deploying every single vaccine in a safe, secure, but quick way.
Well, a lot of people wondering, and on the text line even saying that they feel the rollout has been quite slow. I mean, we got the first doses of this on St. Stephen's Day. There's only been a couple of thousands of them put out so far. And the HSE saying it would be a 9-to-5, 5-day-a-week service rather than a 24-hour service as they're doing in some other countries. Is that entirely down to supply, or why is it seemingly so slow so far?
It won't be 9-to-5, 5 days a week. It will be, as I said, as soon as we get them, we want to deploy them. The health system did want those first few days to test the actual application and to make sure people are confident that this is safe and can be rolled out in a way that works. We've seen some other countries, maybe where they've gone out quicker, but actually have had to stall and check and wait. So the first vaccines were put out in conditions where they could really test and make sure that everyone knew how it's going to be deployed. But now it is going towards mass throughout our health system. Those 17,000 workers, as I said, frontline workers next week, the 75,000 people in both working in long-term nursing homes and residents there this month. And as I said, as soon as the other vaccines come in, the Moderna, or particularly the AstraZeneca vaccine, which I understand is more easily distributed through the likes of GP or pharmacists or other systems because it doesn't need special refrigeration. Far from it being 9 to 5 or 5 days a week, it's going to have to be 24/7 in my mind, all hands on deck. There's 1,700 people already being deployed, being trained up to roll it out. So there's no shortage of resources. There'll be no shortage of impetus to get this out. It's in all our interest to get it delivered to as many people, as quickly as people, as possible, as safely as possible.
Okay. Minister, I'm sure we could talk about COVID for the entire hour, and there are many, many dozens of texts coming in on different aspects. But of course, there are other things going on in the world, and particularly in your brief, it is Brexit week still since the UK left. And we didn't see a huge amount of disruption at the ports, largely because of obviously reduced capacity and the reduced amount of trucks coming and stockpiling, etc., over the last week. But the Road Haulage Association warning potential mayhem this week as that does ramp up. What are you expecting to see yourself from the ports as Transport Minister, and are we prepared for it?
But so far we have. I mean, there's been a huge amount of work going into building new facilities in Dublin Port and Dublin Airport and Rossall Airport in particular. The problem is we're going to see a 12-fold increase in customs checks. Just the very nature of most of our trade is with the UK. All that now has to go through customs checks. European Union, the UK have left the customs union, so they have to be treated in a radically different way. So far it's worked well. We haven't seen any disruption. We haven't seen any delays. It's allowed us a few days just to test the systems. Those, again, additional 1,500 people working to make sure that it doesn't disrupt supplies. It's likely still be relatively quiet for the next week or so. Typically, first week in January isn't the business period. That'll give us more time to assess how we cope. The biggest risk is around Dublin Port. In terms of traffic delays, and there are very detailed plans in place to manage that. I'm confident we can do it. I think the real issue is what are the more medium, long-term consequences of Brexit and to our economy. And some of those will be positive and some will be negative. And I think it's managing the short-term transport issues, but it's keeping an eye on the bigger long-term picture. What does this mean for our relationship with the UK, for our economy here, and to maximise the opportunities that will arise as well?
A worrying amount of those coming in, I think it was 1 in 5, didn't have the right documentation despite all the different various information campaigns that have gone on. I mean, is that a relatively easy fix, or when we do ramp up, are we going to start seeing the delays that we didn't see this week?
It should be. And it was only, I mean, the fact that the deal was only done on Christmas Eve meant, I suppose, that there was a lot of last minute preparation in terms of what the actual rules were around the trade deal that was agreed. So I think, as I said, the relatively low volumes of transport and of trucks in the last week means we've been able to tease out a lot of that. I don't see that. It'll be a pain in the neck for the companies because there's a huge amount of background bureaucratic forms, procedures to be filled. But once we've got used to that, I don't believe it'll become disruptive to our own everyday life. It does provide an additional cost. There is a lack of there's lack of cohesion when Britain is not in the same market as us. But we will be able to manage that. That's not going to be a long-term problem. It will add certain costs and time delays, but it won't be something that disrupts travel per se in a more fundamental way.
Okay, Minister for Transport and Green Party leader Eamon Ryan, lots on your plate as you head into 2021. Thanks for joining us on the record this morning.